Om sahana vavatu sahanau bhunaktu saha vidyan karava vahai tejasvi navati tamastu ma vidvisha vahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Good, welcome back. In our previous class, we covered quite a bit of important material. And before plunging ahead, two things we can do is a little brief review of some of that material, and also some very nice questions have come, so we'll deal with those. The basic, the main argument we're dealing with, argument means why the Mahavakya doesn't mean what we think it means. Which is, so here we're seeing arguments against the validity of the Mahavakya. And we saw a fairly elaborate interpretation, which went something like this. This is house. It's Mahavakya. This wall is house. So part of the house. This is how, that sounds like a Mahavakya. This is that. This wall is that house. The wall is part of the house, but as we would, as Advaitins, we say, but the wall is not identical to the house, the house is not the wall, etc., etc. Or a similar statement would be, if you serve me a bowl of this dahi, yogurt, if I say, this is milk. In a way, it is. It's a modification of milk. So these are two main arguments that we dealt with in a prior class, that the Mahavakya reveals the jiva to be either a part or a modification of Brahman. A part of Brahman, like this wall is house, or a modification of Brahman, like this yogurt is milk. So those are examples and of how the Mahavakya can be misinterpreted. And we went on to say, well, how can jiva be a part of that which is partless? How can jiva be a modification of that which is changeless? Done. You would say, fat. just like that. We have in very easy manner, we can negate those arguments. So, and that we did quite thoroughly. Now, with that bit of review in mind, we have some very good questions. One of which is, I was presenting those arguments that jiva is a part of Brahman, or jiva is a modification of Brahman. I presented those arguments as being arguments which we know are used by the followers of Vishishta Advaita, the teachings of Sri Ramanujacharya. And two of our students were very alert. Some of you also figured this out. And the problem is, if this is an argument of the Vishishta Advaitins, Ramanuja lived, I think, around 1,000 years ago, roughly. Shankaracharya lived about 1,200 years ago. So 200 years before Ramanuja, we're making an argument against the Purva Paksha is the Vishishta Advaitin. So this is 200 years before Ramanuja. So how can we have a Purva Paksha based on the teachings of Vishishta Advaita of Ramanuja? And I made a similar comment about the Neo-Vedanta thing. I'll come to that in just a moment. With regard to Rama, in fact, set Ramanuja aside for a moment and start with Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya did not invent Advaita Vedanta. It was there before he came along. It was there from the time of the ancient rishis. Why do we associate Sri Shankaracharya with Advaita Vedanta? It's because he systematized it. He wrote these brilliant texts and commentaries, and he gave a particular form and approach to the teachings of Vedanta. We can correctly say that he systematized it. So when we go forward 200 years, Ramanuja invented Vishishta Dvaita, or he systematized teachings which were already prevalent. In fact, in Shankaracharya's time, there was a precursor to Ramanuja's teachings, a teaching called Bheda Abheda, which is like, I don't know how to describe it. If Advaita is here and Vishishta Advaita is here, Bheda Bheda is in the middle, someplace in the middle. And of course, Dvaita is further out there. So the point I'm making is these teachings of Jiva being a part or modification of Brahman existed before the time of Ramanuja, before the time of Shankaracharya. So it's not surprising then to see those teachings introduced here as a Purva Paksha, the teachings of Jiva being a modification or part. Strictly speaking, and maybe I misspoke in a prior class, I should not say, if I did say, I shouldn't have said that this Purva Paksha is based on Vishishta Dvaita. That would be incorrect, because truly Vishishta Dvaita didn't exist at that time. But the concepts most certainly did. Then you remember I gave the same argument for, we saw another argument, in fact, at the very end of the class, where we saw that the Mahavakya just reveals an already existent fact. It's what philosophers call a tautology. It's A equals A. So what do you get out of that? You're Satchidananda Atma is already the truth of who you are. That Satchidananda Atma is already identical with Brahman. So what's the point of all this Vedanta? Who needs it? Atma is already full and complete. In a manner of speaking, Atma is already enlightened. And I said, these were teachings that we now associate with a group called Neo-Vedanta. You're already enlightened. You don't need all the, you don't need gurus, you don't need Vedanta, you don't need scripture. All you need to do is give up the false belief that you are bound. That's it. Give it up. We talked about that in some length. So we saw at the end of the class, we saw a refutation of that doctrine. And I pointed out that that doctrine was absolutely unpopular at that time, because people were very scriptural at that time. There were a lot of focus on scripture. So anyone who were to say that the scriptures are useless, that certainly wouldn't be mainstream, but it also wasn't absent. Not mainstream, but that was also part of the rich body of philosophical thinking. There's a school of thought known as Charvaka, which was very negative in this way, negating everything. So we can say that even though Vishishta Dvaita and this Neo-Vedanta didn't exist at that time, the concepts most certainly did exist, and those concepts were negated in our prior discussion. The Purva Paksha seems to want a distinction between Jiva and Sat do not belong to the same order of reality. The argument was not with regard to Jiva and Sat being different orders of reality. The arguments really were this part and modification, and that was very clearly brought out in the class. So the refutation was primarily about Jiva being a part or modification of Brahman, not that it was a different order of reality. In Vishishta Dvaita, second question. Instead of the vispalinga, the spark coming from the fire metaphor, suppose we use gata akasha and mahakasha, the pot space and big space. Would that be more appropriate? Well, in Vedanta, we use that metaphor all the time. But we were talking about the Vishishta Advaita argument or the predecessor, whatever preceded Ramanuja, those thoughts. And those thoughts were very much consistent with this spark and fire metaphor, which is why I used it. Of course, from the standpoint of Vedanta, that statement occurs in an Upanishad, so we also use, we meaning Advaita Vedanta, we also use that same metaphor, spark and fire, but we interpret it differently than the Vishishta Advaitins. Okay, now last couple of questions are more grammatical. By the way, we're going to see some grammatical arguments in our text today. Instead of tat tvam asi, the word tat is a pronoun. We translated that is the remote pronoun. And the question is, wouldn't it have been better if the pronoun this was used instead of that? Why not this? So instead of tat tvam asi, then you could say idam tvam asi or eshah tvam asi, using the proximate pronoun. This is Brahman. And it's an interesting question, but then we have to remember, what is the purpose of the Mahavakya? If you say this is this, you don't get any new knowledge out of that. So, asmi, I am. Am I a this or a that? So that is something remote. This is something immediately present. So in a manner of speaking, I'm not a that. I must be a this. So if we use a pronoun, this, I am, then it becomes this is this, and it starts to lose its capacity to reveal a new truth. The new truth is revealed by equating that something out there to this something in here. That's the power of the Mahavakya. So specifically, that means Satchidananda Atma, which is the same as Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma, but with that upadhi. What upadhi? The entire physical universe has a body. The intelligence of the universe has a mind. Ishvara. That Ishvara is equated to this Satchidananda Atma, which is associated with this tiny little useless upadhi, physical body, this very limited mind and intelligence and senses. And so when you say that Ishvara is this jiva, your response should be, no, it's not. How can that Ishvara be the same as this jiva? Well, it's not exactly. So this is the analysis that comes from Vakya Vritti, the similar text. We said that the middle third of this deals with Mahavakya analysis. So let me give you the analysis that we find in Vakya Vritti. This is a very standard is not the right word. Very important Vedantic analysis. So if we say Ishvara, retire this one. If we say Ishvara is equated to Jiva in the Mahavakya, Tat Tvamasi. That's really the surface meaning of Tat is Ishvara. The surface meaning of Jiva is Tvam. So on the surface, they don't seem to equate at all. But then we say that Ishvara is Satchit Ananda plus Ishvara Upadhi, which means the entire physical cosmos as his body, the intelligence of the world as his mind. And Jiva is equal to the same Satchit Ananda plus the Jiva Upadhi. So this is step two. So step one is to say that Tat really represents Ishvara. Tvam really represents Jiva. Step two is to say who is Ishvara, Satchidananda Atma, or Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma, absolutely the same, with the Samashti Upadhi. Remember that term? The aggregate, the total. And then Jiva is the same Satchidananda Atma plus the Vyashti Upadhi, the individual Upadhi. Then we do a little bit more analysis. We say that these Upadhis are mithya. And since they're mithya, they're not as real as Satchidananda Atma. So you can't add them together. Like you can't add one clay plus one pot. You can't add, they're different orders of reality. You can't add one clay. You can add one clay plus two clays. You can add one pot plus two pots. You cannot add Satyam and Mithya. You can't say one clay plus one pot. So then we have to get rid of these because they can't come into the equation. So by recognizing the Upadhis as mithya, the identity of Ishvara and Jiva is revealed. The simple way to put it is the reality because of which you exist and the reality because of which Ishvara exists is one and the same reality. That's all it means. It's not that complicated. This is a little bit complicated, but that's how the Mahavakyas work. For those of you who studied Vakya Vritti, this is what we call that Bhaga Tyaga Lakshana. I don't want to get into the details of it, but that's basically what this is. So back to the question. If this was a pronoun this, none of this works. Because Ishvara is not a this. Ishvara is a that. And the power of the Mahavakya is in showing how a that and a this can be equated by removing the factors which are mithya. That's the technical way the Mahavakya is understood. Last question. Oh, as we made reference to that Chandogya passage, Eshate Atma Antaryami Amrita, that it's like a Mahavakya comes from Tattvamasi comes from Chandogya. I think the statement also comes. Eshaha, this, Te Atma, your Atma. And it says Te Atma sounds like possession. It is. Te Atma, your Atma. Is that a correct interpretation? Deliberate. We use language deliberately. So Tat was used deliberately to force us to dig deeper to see what's really going on. in the same way we use, the scripture uses that term, te atma, your atma. And we've talked about that in this class. There is no your, if there's a your atma, then it must be different from my atma, and we've dismissed that many times. There's no your atma or my atma. There is the atma, one satchitananda atma, which is the sarvatma, the atma of all. Then why would the text use this language? This is our teaching style. This is all, language is all prakriya. Language is all methodology. And I'll just end this discussion with this. You've heard me say this in another context, and that is, Vedanta is not a collection of facts. Vedanta is not a collection of facts. Science books are collections of facts. This is not science. We've said so many times, Vedanta is a methodology which is capable of removing ignorance. And the way it removes that ignorance is something remarkable. We had a long discussion about this in our Thursday Laghu Vasudeva Manana. Thank you. So we had this long discussion about Adhyaropa Pavada. The whole of the teach, and I don't want to take you through the whole discussion, but just to point out, the whole of Vedanta is a fiction in that it begins by addressing you as if Atma were in a state of bondage, which it's not. Atma was never in a state of bondage. But for the sake of removing our ignorance, the teachings of Vedanta adopt that position and then later give it up. All of Vedanta is adopting a position and giving it up. Adopting another position, giving it up. Adopting another position, giving it up. That's what that Arundhati Darshana Nyaya is about. It's not this star. That is Arundhati. That is Arundhati. That is Arundhati. You've heard that story before. This is Vedanta. It's all Adhyaropa Pavada, intentional superimposition and negation. The take-home point here, that's why I'm being a little... These are complicated ideas, which I'm just glancing upon. The take-home message is the language of Vedanta doesn't convey facts. The language of Vedanta constitutes a means of removing ignorance. And that needs to be understood. Okay, good questions. And with that, we can return to our text. How far we get today. Yata hevam ato vishayasya gunam. Yata hevam ato vishayasya gunam. Vishayena sahatmani mudhadhiya. Vishayena sahatmani adhiropitam hapsviva bhumi gunam. Adhiropitam hapsviva mi pratishedhati tattvamasiti vachaha pratishedhati tattvamasiti vachaha yataha evam. Since this is so, he likes this language, he uses that expression many times. Since this is so, which is like bringing us to reflect on everything that has come before in this text. So based on everything we have seen so far, Vishayasya gunam, Vishayena saha, Atmani mudhadhiya, adhiropitam. Before I explain the Sanskrit, the point of the Mahavakya, one of the last points we saw in the prior class, the Mahavakya is to remove ignorance, full stop. Doesn't cause anything to change. doesn't cause the limited Atma to become free and full. Atma is already free and full. So nothing changes, nothing happens. And we've joked before, what do you get out of Vedanta? In a manner of speaking, you don't get anything. It's a matter of what you get rid of. We get rid of ignorance, in particular, the ignorance that is the cause of suffering. The root cause of all suffering is a particular kind of ignorance. That ignorance is removed by the teachings of Vedanta. And it is the Mahavakya, that is the pramana, the means of knowledge, that destroys that ignorance. So that's the point made in the prior part. Mahavakya removes ignorance. And now he illustrates what that's about, that ignorance. He says, mudhadhiya, by a deluded mind. Mudha, deluded. Dhi means buddhi, mind. A deluded mind or intellect. By that deluded mind or intellect, atmani, upon atma, vishayena saha vishayasya gunam adhyaropitam. That statement is a little elaborate. He says, due to ignorance, atmani, upon atma, something is adhyaropitam, superimposed. What is superimposed? Vishayasya gunam, the qualities. Vishaya means object. And here the objects we're talking about are body and mind. So vishayasya gunam. Guna means quality or dharma. So the qualities of our bodies and minds, vishayena saha, along with our bodies and minds. Our bodies and minds, along with their attributes, are all superimposed on atma. So when I say, I am this one, the body is superimposed. When I say, I am sitting in this chair, body is superimposed. When I say, I am teaching, mind is superimposed. If I say, I need to lose some weight, the quality of the body is superimposed. If I say I am tired or sleepy, then a quality of the mind or prana is superimposed. So here we have two kinds of superimposition. In commentaries, they like this, the language of dharma adhyasa and dharmi adhyasa. Little technical, but I think most of you are ready for this. So two kinds, the word here, adhiropita or adhyaropita, they're synonyms, means they're superimposed. So superimposition is adhyasa, two kinds of adhyasa, dharmi and dharma. In the sub-commentaries on Shankara's Introduction to Brahma Sutra, they get into this in great detail. Dharma means quality. In this context, you already know dharma has many, many meanings, one of which, dharma can be a synonym for guna. When you say the dharma of water is to be wet and cool, the word dharma is frequently used in that sense to mean guna. So here he says, vishayasya gunam, the qualities, guna, of the body and mind. So that is dharma adhyasa. When I say I need to lose weight or I am sleepy, I'm superimposing qualities of the body and mind, atmani, anatma. So those are examples of dharma, adhyasa. Then when I say, I am sitting in this chair, my I-ness has been superimposed on the body, right? I am sitting. Satchidananda Atma doesn't sit anywhere. In order to sit, you need one of these. Atma don't have one. So when I say I am sitting in this chair, I superimposed, I don't want to get into this mutual superimposition, let me just keep it a little bit simple. So we also superimpose the dharmi. The dharmi is that which has a dharma. So water is the dharma. If water has coolness and wetness as its dharma, water itself is the dharmi. Dharmi is that which has a dharma quality. The owner of the qualities is dharmi. So here there's also dharmi adhyasa when I say I am sitting in this chair or I am tired. So we have both kinds of superimposition. Both of these are adhiropita. The more common form is adhyaropita, means exactly the same thing. Superimposed. Atmani, upon Atma. How is it in superimposed? Mudha dhya, due to ignorance in our minds. And what is superimposed? The body and mind are superimposed on Atma, and the qualities of the body and mind are superimposed on Atma. And that adhyaropitam, that which is superimposed, in the last line, pratishedhati, is negated. Negated how? Tattvamasi iti vachaha. The statement, vachaha, tattvamasi, the Mahavakya, is that which does the negation of superimposition. And there it is. This is Vedanta. Ignorance in the sense of non-recognition of your true nature. In the presence of that ignorance, dharma adhyasa and dharmi adhyasa take place. It's a two-step. First step is non-recognition. Step two is superimposition. Two steps. First, you have to not recognize the rope. Only after not recognizing the rope, then you can superimpose the snake. So first step is non-recognition. In Sanskrit, we call that agrahana, the absence of grasping the reality of what it is. And then step two is adhyasa, superimposition. So these are the factors that cause superimposition. And notice, as soon as you superimpose the qualities of the body and mind, and the body and mind itself on Atma, as soon as you identify with your body and mind, you'll suffer. That's it. Body and mind are imperfect, always subject to suffering. So as soon as you identify with the body and mind and their qualities, suffering is inescapable. Therefore, the solution to the problem of suffering is to remove this adhyasa, that which is adhiropita. But how do you remove this superimposition? And go back to our Neo-Vedanta. So when you say that you suffer because you think you are in a state of bondage, to consider yourself to be in a state of bondage is superimposition. So give it up. This is the approach of Neo-Vedanta. It would be just like if we're in a dark alley and you see the snake, and I tell you, the snake is a superimposition. Don't see it. Wait a minute. You get the point. You will continue to see the snake until and unless you recognize the rope. Superimposition is removed by destroying the ignorance that underlies it. Identification with the body and mind is superimposition. The way to remove it is to go to the root cause being ignorance, what Pujya Swamiji called self non-recognition. These scholars call agrahana, absence of grasping the reality. So the superimposition of the body and mind and its qualities on Atma takes place due to ignorance, and that ignorance, pratishedhati, is removed. The superimposition is removed, but again, the superimposition is removed by destroying the ignorance. And this is a subtle point, and allow me just to make it. Suppose we were to focus only on the identification with the body. Suppose we're going to focus only on the superimposition and ignore the underlying ignorance, which is the cause for superimposition. That would mean to say that you suffer because of your identification with the body and mind. So we have to remove that identification with the body and mind. How should you do that? Well, I'm going to teach you a meditation technique, and that meditation technique is to go on saying, I am Brahman, I am Brahman, I am Brahman, I am Brahman. This is one of our Purva Pakshas, by the way. I am Brahman, I am Brahman. So what are you doing? You're identifying with Brahman. And to the extent that you identify with being Brahman, to that extent, you don't identify with your body and mind. It should work, right? I am Brahman, I am Brahman. It's like our positive thinking friends. I am rich, I am famous. They have all this stuff. Anyway. I am Brahman, I am Brahman, I am Brahman. Will that work? Not without removing the root cause for the wrong identification in the first place. So you don't replace one kind of identification with another. This is really the fault of this positive thinking, and also this doctrine is this pratisankhyana is the technical term for this I am Brahman thing. Pujya Swamiji talked about it really nicely. He says, if your problem is the conditioning of your mind, you don't fix it by superimposing another kind of conditioning on your mind. So right now you're conditioned to think, I'm an idiot, I'm a loser, I'm useless, etc. So now on top of that conditioning, without removing that conditioning, you put another conditioning on top of it. I am Brahman, I am Brahman, I am Brahman. Now you've really got a mess. You have two kinds of contradictory conditioning all going on in your mind. Where is any freedom in that? So Vedanta is not a process of conditioning your mind. It's a process of deconditioning your mind. Surprisingly, Pujya Swami Dayananda, even used the term dehypnotization. It's surprising that he would use such a term, but he did. And you can see why. So we're not trying to convince ourselves that we are Brahman. We are trying to remove the false identification with the body and mind. And the way that false identification is removed is by removing the ignorance because of which identification takes place. The ignorance of the rope allows the projection of the snake to take place. Ignorance of your true self allows identification with the body and mind to take place. Removing ignorance of the rope gets rid of the snake. Removing ignorance of Atma gets rid of identification. So it's a matter of de-superimposition which takes place through knowledge. De-superimposition that takes place through knowledge, and he gives an example. Apsu eva bhumi gunam. This is kind of an old-fashioned example. We won't get it from our modern standpoint. Suppose you have some water and it stinks. Now, you know, from a modern standpoint, you can understand. But now, remember, in ancient times, they had a very different way of understanding things. They understood that gandha, smell, is a quality of prithivi, earth. Smell is a guna or dharma of prithivi. Here the word bhumi means the same, earth. Bhumi gunam, that bad smell belongs to earth. So when you have this stinking water, apsu, in the water is bhumi gunam, is the stink. But the stink doesn't belong to the water. The stink belongs to the element of earth, which is dissolved in the water. So here, the stink doesn't belong to Atma. The stink belongs to the body and mind and everything else. So this is the metaphor. Okay. Bottom line then, and just to reflect back on last week's argument, is there is absolutely no difference between jiva and Ishvara, because any differences are not as real as jiva. The technical term is upadhika. The commentator uses that term. Upadhi, you understand. Upadhika, based on an upadhi. Upadhika means it's not real. So we can say that the particular shape of the pot is upadhika. And if I had two pots, I could definitely say that the difference between pot A and pot B, the difference is upadhika, because it's the same clay. One clay in two forms. The difference is upadhika. So any possible difference between jiva and Ishvara, or jiva and Brahman, to stay with our language here, those differences are upadhika. All right. Then. Oops. All right, we'll read this, and it needs some introduction. Sata heva hi nama jagat prakritir. Sata heva hi nama jagat upadhana vashariha jivayati. Upadhana vashariha jivayati. Ata heva na jiva satatvakatam. Atha heva na jiva sakatvataka prakritasya satah pratiparayati prakritasya satah pratiparayati. Before we see this verse, in fact, this verse and the next two verses, I think we'll see tonight, deal with one of those. I remember at the beginning of this section, we saw those four arguments against the validity of the Mahavakya. One argument said that the Mahavakya is meditation on Brahman. You are to meditate. Tattvamasi, meditate, I am Brahman. There we go. I am Brahman, I am Brahman. So that another argument was it was a figurative usage. He is a lion. Devadatta is a lion. You are Brahman. And another argument, it was praise. You are as great as Indra. You are as great as Brahman. So then remember the fourth, though, was a little odd one. And that was, instead of saying, Jiva is identical to Brahman, you flip it around, say Brahman is identical to Jiva. After all, this Mahavakya Tattvamasi is a little bit like an equal sign in math. And equal signs in math have this bi-directional, is that what they call commutative property? If I remember all this mathematical stuff. Anyway, that's a long time ago. So which means if A equals B, B equals A. So if tat is tvam, I'm sorry, other way. If tvam is tat, then tat must be tvam. Uh-oh. So that was the argument. And that is exactly the argument that's going to be dismissed in this verse and the two verses following. This verse deals with it in terms of content, the meaning, and then the next two verses will deal with it from a grammatical or syntactical level. So if the Mahavakya says tat tvam asi, why can't it mean Brahman is as good as you are? After all, A equals B, B equals A, Jiva is Brahman, so therefore Brahman is Jiva. So how to dismiss that? So that's the argument that's taken up here. So he says, sataha eva hi nama sataha jagat prakritehe upadhanavashat iha jivaha. That word nama up above has to be connected with jiva below. Jivaha nama iti sataha jagat prakritehe. Sataha, for sat. Sat means what? Brahman. For that sat, which is jagat prakrite, prakriti. Prakritehe sataha. For that jagat, here the word prakriti means source. Doesn't have any other meaning. For that Brahman, which is jagat prakriti, which is the source of the world. So for that Brahman, which is the source of the world, jivaha iti nama, it is called jiva. It is called jiva. So this is the misinterpretation of the Mahavakya. So jiva is Brahman. Now we're saying Brahman is jiva. So that Brahman, which is the cause of the world, jivaha nama iti, it is called jiva. Why? Upadhana vashat. Vashat, due to. Upadhana, another metaphor for adhyasa, adhyaropa, adhiropa we saw, adhyaropa, all of these mean superimposition. Here too, upadhana. Superimposition. So Brahman gets called jiva due to superimposition, which means it's a mistake. It's like you're in the dark alley and you call that thing coiled up on the ground, you call it snake. When you call it a snake, does it make it a snake? It continues to be a rope. You merely call it a snake due to ignorance. In the same way, if we say Brahman is his little jiva, it's due to ignorance. Only due to ignorance could you attribute the limitations of a jiva to Brahman. Ataha eva, for this reason, jiva satatvakatam prakritasya sataha na pratipadayati. You can, if you have this, you can correct the translation. That not should be at the end, should be teaches. Should the not not being of should be removed and put it with the word teach, does not teach. I'll get the translation is, so the nature of Brahm, the nature of Jiva being Brahman, the Mahavakya does not teach. I'm just correcting my translation. The nature of Jiva being Brahman, it, the Mahavakya, does not teach. Technically, my translation is correct. It's just messed up. So better to make it correct. So here's what he's saying, that prakritasya sataha for Brahman, sataha, which is prakritasya, the Brahman which we're talking about, or the Brahman which is the source of the universe, for that Brahman, jiva satatvakatam, the nature of the limited jiva, Brahman na pratipadayati. And you have to include the subject of the sentence, which isn't mentioned. The subject of the sentence is Mahavakya. The Mahavakya na pratipadayati. The Mahavakya does not say, the Mahavakya does not teach that Brahman possesses the nature of being a jiva. So here, he's denying that misinterpretation. A equals B, therefore B equals A. Jiva is Brahman, therefore Brahman is a jiva. We negate that. Why? It's untenable. So in the first half of the verse, he says that to attribute the status of being a jiva to Brahman is due to ignorance. It is superimposed. Therefore, the Mahavakya does not teach that Brahman possesses the attributes of jiva. It sounds complicated because of it's like a logical argument being made. The argument is A equals B, therefore B equals A, and we negate it by saying no. I'm going to make this worse. The B-ness of A is superimposed. Huh? The jiva-twam of Brahma is superimposed due to ignorance. Therefore, we cannot say that the Mahavakya says that Brahman possesses the nature of jiva. That's a B equals A. We accept the A equal B part, but we reject the B equals A part. This is not mathematics, right? We don't have any commutative property in Vedanta that belongs to our mathematician friends. And to make that really clear, he in the next two verses, we'll just see quickly, they're very simple. He shows syntactically why the Mahavakya only means A is B. The Mahavakya doesn't mean B is A, due to the very syntax of the statement tat tvam asi. So the verse we just saw says, based on the content of the teachings, based on the fact that jiva tva is superimposed on Brahman due to ignorance, therefore you cannot interpret the Mahavakya B equals A. So that's the first argument. Now comes the second argument. And a second argument is tattvamasi only means A is B. Tattvamasi does not mean B is A. I hope I'm making some sense. And there's some logic here. It's a little obscure. Okay, let's see that. Tvamasiti padadvayameti yujam. Tvamasiti padadvayameti yujam. Tadati dvanina sahatat tvamati tadati dvanina saha tattvam kriyaya saha nama param samiyan kriyaya saha nama param samiyan nirapekshamupaityanayahiyujam. So this is actually a syntactical analysis of this tattvam asi. Again, it is not that asi cannot be an equal sign. And I have to admit, I've written on this board more than once, tat equals tvam, and now I have to retract that. It's not. Because an equal sign is bidirectional. And he's making the point here. It's not bidirectional at all. And here's how he establishes it. So you start with padadvayam, two words. What are those two words? Tvam, asi, iti. So these two words, tvam and asi, the second and third words. So these two words, eti, yujam, are connected dvanina saha, along with another sound, along with another word, and that other word is tat, iti. So he's saying tvam asi is a pair of words which is connected to tat. He's giving you a syntactical analysis. And it's pure grammar, because you cannot connect asi to tat. Those of you who know a little bit of grammar, tat is third person, asi is second. So in English, you say, the second person, are. The table, are. Huh? The table is. You are. So here we have a verb, are. And a verb, are, can only be connected to a second person subject. Tvam. The verb are, asi, cannot be connected to a third person subject, tat. So the two words together, tvam asi, you are. Those words are inseparable. You cannot say tat asi. You can only say tvam asi, you are. And then the word tat gets connected to that pair, paradvayam. And in this way, putting it together, tattvam. So tat is added to tvam, and you get tattvam at the end of the second line. Now he makes a point. Kriyaya saha, along with the verb. Well, my translation is badly wrong. let me see this. Kriyaya saha namapadam samiyat becomes samiyan due to some grammar. So the pronoun tat is wrong. The pronoun tvam. So by the way, he doesn't specify. He just says namapadam. Namapadam means pronoun. So the verse says, the pronoun samiyat should be connected with what? Kriyaya saha, to the verb. The pronoun should be connected to the verb. Now the tricky part is, tat is a pronoun, tvam is also a pronoun. And he doesn't tell you which, you just have to be smart enough to know which. And apparently when I did this translation, I wasn't smart enough, because it's the wrong one. So, the pronoun tvam must be connected with the verb. No, excuse me. He's making a different point here. No. In fact, my translation turns out to be correct, and I'll show you why. So, kriya saha samyat has to be connected to the verb. The verb, of course, is connected to its subject. So you have tvam asi. They're inseparable. Tvam asi are in. You are is inseparable. Now he says the pronoun tat has to be connected to the verb which is inseparably connected to tvam. So the pronoun tat has to be connected to tvam asi, you are. Why? Nirapekshyam upaiti anaya. Anaya hi yujam, by this connection. Anaya yujam, by this connection, by connecting tat to tvamasi, nirapeksham upaiti. You remove an expectation. This is the language of grammarians. And the language of grammarians is certain expressions create an expectation. For example, when you say, and this is, I'm giving you the preview, this is what's explained in the next verse, but it'll make more sense if I explain it now. So, apeksha is a word that comes here. Apeksha means expectation. What is the apeksha, the expectation? If I say you are, suppose we're talking, and I say, you are, and I stop. There's an expectation. You can't just say you are. You leave an expectation hanging, as it were. So the second half of this verse says, anaya hi yujam, by making that connection, by sticking the tat along with the tvamasi, nirapeksham upaiti, you remove that expectation. You satisfy that expectation. And that's what's explained in the next verse. We'll just let Totakacharya explain that in more detail. He says, Purusho bihitas tvamasi tiyara. Purusho bihitas tvamasi tiyara. Kim asani vadeti tadabhimukaha. Kim asani vadeti tadabhimukaha. Shravanaya bhaved animari gunam. Shravanaya bhaved animari. Sarati prakratam. Tadasi tivadet. Sarati prakritam tadasi tivadet. Suppose there is a purushaha, a person, who is abhimukaha, standing in front of you. And yada, when that person says, tvamasi, you are, yati. So when that person standing in front of you says, you, I'm exaggerating, you get the idea. You are, and then what is your response? Your response is, Kim Asani Vara. So, Kim Asani, what am I? Vara, tell me. So, the expectation is created when you say Tvamasi, you are. And then you have that expectation is expressed. Kim Asani, what am I? Vara, tell me that. Tat abhimukha. Abhimukaha, you say that to the person standing in front of you, and then that statement is shravanaya. For the statement tvamasi, with the dangling expectation, is shravanaya, to make you listen. By the way, the commentator also makes it very clear. It's obvious in the latter part of the verse. The purusha in the first line is the guru. The person who says, what am I, in a second line, is the shishya. So the guru says, Twamasi. And the shishya says, Kimasani. What am I? And this is the teaching methodology. The guru said that, Shravanaya, to make you listen. To make you listen to what? Shravanaya bhavet. That expectation is to make you listen animadi gunam. Anima here means just subtle. Doesn't mean atomic or anything. So a subtle guna, and I've translated it a subtle truth. I think that's a reasonable translation here. It's to make you listen to a subtle truth. You create the expectation, tomasi, you are. And then that's to create this attention. What am I? So that you listen to the subtle truth. And what is the subtle truth? Sadati prakritam tadasi iti vadet. Then the teacher answers, vadet. The teacher answers, and it's a two-part answer. First is sat iti. By the way, this is really terse. He's making these references to the Chandogya Upanishad. Sadeva somya idam agra asit. When Shvetaketu's father began teaching, that's where he began. Idam agre asit. In the beginning, what was sat eva, Brahman alone. That teaching came first, sat iti prakritam. That teaching came first. And then what came later was tat asi. That you are. In fact, it came nine times later. So first came sadeva somya idam agra asit. In the beginning, what was one non-dual Brahman. Then later, and that creates the expectation. You know, sadeva somya idam agra. In the beginning was one Brahman. And I guess the expectation is, okay, what about me? What's it to me? There's the expectation. And the expectation gets fulfilled. Tat asi. You tat. By the way, the word tvam is missing here. Some of you know grammatically the verb asi implies the subject tvam. So it's not necessary to write it out, but it certainly is implied. So first the guru says, sadeva somya iramagra asit. In the beginning there was one Brahman. And the expectation is sat. What about that Brahman? What is my relationship to that Brahman? Then later that expectation is fulfilled. Tat, that Brahman, tvam asi. You are that Brahman. Vadet, the guru will say, iti, in this way. So here what he's pointing out is how the Mahavakya works through generating this expectation. Twamasi are inseparable, and it creates this expectation, which is fulfilled by the word tat. And notice you can't flip it around. Again, twamasi are inseparable, so you can't flip it around. It unlike math, where A equals B and B equals A, the Mahavakya does not have that commutative property. You cannot flip it around. But on the other hand, it works by creating this expectation. Tvamasi, you are. What am I? Tat. That's the Mahavakya. A nice reference here to the Chandogya Upanishad. Okay. Good place to stop tonight. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, Ma kascha dukkha bhag bhavet asato ma satgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityor ma amritangamaya om shanti 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 om.
Very nice. See you next time.